Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy do, everyone, and welcome to Wrestling Night in America. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host this week. Greg Park's still out on vacation, out there having fun, and I'm doing this with my headphones only working in one side, so hopefully that won't throw me too badly. We're going to talk about the many happenings in wrestling this week. If you want to call us, that is 515-605-9345, and you can get yourself on the show and ask us a question about those things that happened, all these shows coming up. We got Forbidden Door a week away, and as usual, not a lot of matches announced, but it's the kind of show that kind of gets by on just being what it is. We'll talk about maybe that. How they can improve the way that they promote that show. And then, of course, just beyond that, we've got Money in the Bank, but plenty happening across the world of wrestling. I am going to go ahead and make sure that my guy Kevin Catani is here. Kevin, if you're here, say hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. I can hear you real well. Always a good start. I have more issues when starting Greg's show than I do any other show. I don't know what it is. I feel like I'm being sabotaged, but hopefully that is not the case. Good to hear from you. And what do you think? What's the biggest story of wrestling this week?
Well, I tend to be more WWE-centric in my viewing, although I do take a look at all of the things. But I have to think that based on what I've seen on social media and sort of my own viewership, that the split of the bloodline, I think, is a huge, huge, huge deal as far as WWE is concerned. And then the other issue, and I tried closely to monitor, I actually had a friend go and was trying to get some live updates, but sort of the, I'll say flesh in the pan, for lack of a better term, for the new AEW Saturday night show in terms of the good show, but no setup for next week. And I don't know if that's how you want to start a new hour of programming for a company who's still fighting to be the number two brand nationally. So I think those are the two big American headlines as far as I've been paying attention to. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you nailed them. CM Punk going out there and potentially being the version of CM Punk that people wanted to see all along is probably a good thing. Amazing that it took them this to get there, but I think that's kind of an ongoing thing. The what you say about AEW, that issue of not promoting for the future well enough. They've been halfway decent on Dynamite, but it's amazing that a company that only does a small handful of major shows, pay-per-views, whatever you want to call them these days, a year, they'll get to 2 weeks out and only have 3-4 matches announced, sometimes less in the case of the last one. So I'm amazed that that happened so much with Forbidden Door. I think they kind of get away with it a little more because so much of it is just what people call dream matches, whether they are or not. And it's got some big ones. The matches announced so far are Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada, Sonata versus Jungle Boy, and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus MJF. You know, I'm 100%er on New Japan. I watch every show they do. And I've been wondering who Sonata would face for the championship. I got to say, Jungle Boy is not one of the names that jumped out at me as somebody who might be facing Sonata for that IWGP championship. So I don't know. I think the show gets by regardless with those other matches. Omega Ospreay especially, and Danielson Okada, for those of us who know Okada, are very, very excited about that. But, okay, so I know that you've caught some New Japan, probably at the arm twisting of guys like me, like Sean, like Rich. Hopefully we've had some sort of influence on you.
You sure have.
And I know that you've seen some AEW as well. As somebody who's more neutral in that regard, what do you think of the promotion of this show in comparison to last year, if you can compare?
Well, I actually kind of nodded along with your open to the show, where it seems like, again, in my humble opinion, of the two brands, and I don't think this is a stretch, but certainly New Japan is carrying the weight of the Forbidden Door show. And I think that whoever is the American side marketing arm is far more relying on names like Okada and Tanahashi and Sonata to carry the opponents versus the other way around. Now, obviously, Omega put up a fantastic body of work in Japan. And I know that Brian Danielson has had his feet in the water over there periodically. But, you know, I think it's one of those where, as someone who studies and teaches marketing, you know, there is a school of thought that advocates for regular, consistent, in-your-face messaging versus the periodic messaging, but just hoping that the panache of the event is enough to sort of carry it. And I think with as much wrestling product as on the airwaves these days, even with some of the names in that show, I just feel like you can ill afford to sit on your haunches and just sort of hope that what you have announced is enough, when AEW has all this programming now. Why are you not, maybe not every commercial break, but every third commercial break, pitching that show? You know, why aren't we using the assets we have to be more diligent in that? Because I think come that show, you know, again, you could be just out of mind for some of your casual and like mid-tier viewers, that they might completely forget it was that night. You know, I think not too long ago there was an NXT premium live event or something, and Nate and I were talking through social media, and I said like, oh, hey, you're going to watch the show tonight because I don't think you guys were covering it or something. And he's like, oh, I completely forgot it was on the Saturday, not the Sunday, that sort of thing. And I think that's the risk they run in not being more proactive in that promotion.
And they could be spread thin of late. Obviously, CM Punk was a focus because they announced him for Collision and pulled back, then announced him again. And then he ended up being there. Obviously, that was a deal that was going to get done, but neither side wanted to flinch. So there's that. And they're promoting. It's tough to do something like this when you're also doing your own storylines on TV every week. This is the have your cake and eat it too kind of show. As the guy who covers NXT for the Torch, I felt exactly the same when they were heading toward a really, really exciting takeover. And then they kind of had to have all their characters pretend like it didn't exist because they were working towards Survivor Series also. So these people that were in feuds with each other had to pretend they wanted to team together for the Survivor Series for the one or maybe 2 years, maybe just one. I don't remember anymore. They all run together when you're old. Where they were in the Survivor Series matches, the 5-on-5-on-5 that they did for a couple of years. So I don't know, maybe stretched a little thin. That said, Collision was, they did a lot of stuff. So Luchasaurus, new TNT champion, Andrade beat Buddy Matthews using the figure eight, which I thought was pretty great. And then they announced the Owen Cup. I don't remember if that was the first time they announced it. But their main event, Punk and FTR defeated Jay and Juice and Joe. So coming out there with a bang, doing all that. So I don't know if you caught the show or if you have any specific thoughts on that, or if you saw Punk's interview, but assuming maybe you did see that interview, or at least know about it, what did you think in terms of how they're portraying Punk now in comparison to what was done before?
Yeah, well, I watched it after the fact, but heard about it in the moment. And, you know, I feel like it's one of those cases, and maybe not unlike Cody when AEW started, where either the talent or the management or both were like, you know what, let's try to fight against this typecast thing and see if we can't write a new narrative. When the fan base already knows about you or there's something that they like about you and you sort of try to take a left turn from it, I think it still hits enough people weird that that's where that lack of buy-in really came in. And I remember even too, like when the Elite, when AEW started and the Elite was like, well, let's not win all the championships right away because that's what everyone's expecting. And well, then you've dialed yourself down and now you've got to build yourself back up again. And so I wonder, would we be even in this Punk boat if this is the Punk they just let be to start? And I wonder if they sort of have been in that loop of, well, let's try to rewrite the story on a character. Oh, it didn't work. Okay, let them do what they do. And then maybe it's too late. I mean, it's too soon to tell, but I feel like you do a lot more damage than you build goodwill when you try to, I don't want to say outsmart fans, but like try to use it as a fresh start when the whole reason why everybody was excited that AEW signed Punk was because of Punk, not because of Punk 2.0, if you will.
All right. We have only scratched the surface there. Haven't even scratched the surface yet of the Bloodline storyline. You can call us 515-605-9345, and I'm going to go to Ryan in Cumberland calling us, and we hear from him often on NXT. But Ryan, what did you have on your mind here on Wrestling Night in America?
I just got back from the WWE show tonight, the Father's Day show, and one of the featured matches was Rey Mysterio against Dominic in a street fight, and Rey attempted to give Dominic a powerbomb, and the table didn't quite break. He looked like he took a little bit of a nasty bump to the head. So my question is, how many wrestlers get hurt from these tables that don't break like they're supposed to?
You know, hard to put a number on that. Certainly I've seen it. I see it a little bit more in New Japan because of the type of table that they use that breaks not quite as easily. And it also requires a bigger degree of precision. I think American wrestling very wisely uses great big wide stupid tables that do what they're supposed to do and almost never have any real issues unless somebody misses or unless somebody like Sasha Banks doesn't weigh very much. So Charlotte throws her on the table and it doesn't break because Sasha's very small. Certainly, I've seen issues where it broke in a way that was not great, where something is kind of sticking at the head of that person. But, we've seen it before where table spots go wrong. Not as wrong as things like ladders or things like that. I feel like they've kind of got breaking the ladders, breaking these down to a science, but I'm kind of stuck on the fact that it's Ray and his son, because you don't want to injure anybody. But if Ray seriously hurt Dominic, I don't know how he'd live with himself. That would be very tough. And Ray has been in the ring during an actual genuine tragedy before, and it wasn't his fault. It was just something that happened. But I don't know how he even came back from that. Kevin, can you think of table spots gone awry?
Well, I can think, my brain immediately flashes to several, but I think in this particular case, Ryan, it was probably just Dominic weighs more than Ray, and I just don't know that the way that the physics and the angle lines up, he was able to get the momentum he needed to get through the table. Because you're right, they are those run-of-the-mill, like, church hall particle board tables, and they should break if you hit them right in the center as spread out as they are. But, again, those are not foolproof. And I don't know – I know for a while they were purposely, like, cutting pieces of the support frames out to make sure that they would break. I don't know if they're still doing that or not, although I assume they've got to be doing something. But, yeah, I don't know that this was a botch as much as Ray giving up, what, probably 8 to 10 inches on his son, if not more, and then having to, like, get him up over his head and into the middle of the table. You know, if Dom's butt hits table before back, that takes out some of the energy. So, but yeah, I don't know that it was an intentional mess up. I'm sure Ray gave him a big hug afterwards and said, "Hey man, sorry." But yeah, I think that just, even as flimsy as particle board tables can be, you've still got to hit them in the right spot for them to do what they do.
Yeah, this is probably like the one situation where you can be absolutely certain nobody's trying to hurt anyone else. Ryan, what else do you have?
My second question is on Seth Rollins and his championship defenses. Tonight he defended against Damian Priest, and then last night he defended against Damian Priest also successfully. And with these matches coming up with Monday Night Raw and NXT, how many times do you think that title is going to get defended in 1 year? Do you think it'll be over 100 times in a year?
100 times in a year. The only way that's going to happen is if they're constantly doing those on house shows, which is possible. Roman is not the kind of guy who's going to have that schedule. He does not have to. But I think that they probably like the idea of at least one championship being defended on a regular basis. Seth's there for the long haul, and as big of a star as he is, he's not the kind of guy who is on a level where he should be almost never featured. I think that those kind of guys like Roman are few and far between, where you really do want to treat them as you got to pay to see them. I think that we'll see a lot of defenses in one way or another. I'm psyched about what they're doing with Money in the Bank. Lots of names that you don't expect to be in these matches. Lots of first time people in these matches, or at least on the main roster and things like that. The Money in the Bank is a match where somebody can be elevated, and it seems like that's almost inevitable. But I'm a little off track. Let me throw to Kevin.
And I just brain farted as you were brain farting.
Seth, defending the championship.
Yes. I don't know. 100 times, and I know that you may have been speaking in hyperbole, but, you know, I certainly think any time there's been an undisputed champion, and certainly as part of Brock's run, part of Roman's run, you know, the product as a whole becomes stale when there aren't stakes. And so, you know, that's where when several of the guys like AJ and those really rebuilt the Intercontinental title, and Bobby Lashley rebuilt the Intercontinental title, and now Gunther's doing it. Like, good that you can build up a middle, you know, the mid-card title, but there's got to be some stakes at the top level. And so certainly Seth is not going to run away from anything, and really sort of embraces this role as, okay, fine, let me be the standard bearer, I'm ready. And so I love that. If not every week, maybe every other week, there's going to be some sort of open challenge or something like that. And I think he's the guy that you wanna have out there, because he's going to have great matches with the guys who are good. And if there's somebody that they do in an open challenge that they're trying to see in real life, you know, and try to get, you know, maybe not necessarily a rookie, but someone who's trying to establish themselves, you know, who's going to bring the best out of them more than Seth? And so I think that, that he's the right guy for it, and I look forward to seeing both short-term and long-term how they let him sort of live into this role of his now.
There's so many different approaches to world championship reigns. You've got the Roman Reigns never defending kind of thing, and then not even doing the house shows in general. Seth on potentially the other side of the coin, and then, for instance, in Japan, you've got, like, they, in Japan, they're way more likely to talk about a reign in terms of number of successful defenses than they are in terms of days. Every now and then, the announcers will talk about the number of days, but it, for the most part, they prefer to talk about number of defenses. And if somebody reaches 10 defenses in a reign, that's considered very, very good. They don't do that very often.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's funny you say that, Kelly. I wish WWE would do more of that. I love how New Japan does defenses, and then, like, they'll also give a number to the champion. Like, they're the 35th IWGP World Heavyweight, you know, something like that, where, like, you get an idea of that lineage. Because I remember in NXT, they did a lot of that in the early days of the you could trace champion to champion to champion. And then even now with Wes Lee, they're really leaning into him having the most defenses of the North American championship. And so I wish that the product as a whole, or the company as a whole, would emulate New Japan that way more, because I think it adds a little more credibility.
Yeah, I was going to mention Lee in that regard, because he's the one guy who they've actually been talking about that number. And I think that's probably because he's gotten to a sheer number of defenses that just outdoes anyone else. So they realized, oh, well, that's a good talking point. But if he hadn't gotten there, they wouldn't be talking about his third defense, his fourth defense. I don't see WWE doing it now, because then you're in a weird position where 3 months into his title reign, if you're going to count Seth Rollins' matches on house shows, you're talking about his 24 title defenses. Meanwhile, Roman's had 20 in 3 years. I think they'd want to shy away from that. I don't know what the number is. It might be less than 20. I know it's not much more than that. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the number of defenses that Roman is doing because of the title reign that a guy like him needs to have. But I am fascinated by the different approaches to that, and how the worker plays into that. Ryan, what else do you have?
I have a question on this show I saw on YouTube called Russell Park, that's a cross between South Park and pro wrestling. Has any wrestler spoke out against how they feel about their character being betrayed in this parody manner?
You know, I follow a lot of wrestlers on Twitter. I don't know that I've seen any of them really acknowledge it in a big way. Kevin, have you?
No, I haven't either. And I feel like in the times, and you said South Park, Ryan, so I'll stick to that. But in the times when even South Park has pulled in wrestlers and things like that, like, there never seems to be a big, well, how dare they use me? Like, I feel like in a lot of cases, press is good press. And so, yeah, I haven't seen anything either, no.
Yep, sorry about that, but if they do speak out, I am sure we will be talking about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to comment on the Ray powerbomb. It was not the traditional powerbomb, but the one off the second rope, so he did have a little bit of leverage on that powerbomb. It seemed like Dominic may have been okay, because they went a couple minutes after the spot, but I know he was holding his head after the match, though. So.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out in a couple of days if he's showing up as scheduled on TV.
I appreciate you taking the call.
Thanks as always, Ryan. All right. So, unless you've got more to say on the AEW thing, not, you know, the entire AEW experience, but on Punk, let's shift to the Bloodline. I know that they get a lot of airtime, but it seems like this is one of those times where it must be. So a long time getting here, a lot of twists and turns, a lot of people not realizing that it was going to go there, which is crazy to me because I think those of us who have been paying attention to this story have kind of been waiting for it to be Jay for a while. And now we're getting there, and I'll tell you this, Roman doesn't lay down and eat pins a whole lot, but man, when the time comes to put somebody over huge in a segment, wow, is he good at that. That look he did kind of off the camera when Sami Zayn took him down is one of my favorite things I've seen in wrestling in something other than a match in the last year. But at any rate, Kevin, it's happened. The Bloodline has imploded. They are a very small faction, if you can call them that. I don't know what number of people you have to be an official faction. But it's here. And what did you think of the segment? And when do you think Jay or what matches are coming and in what order and when? No pressure, but tell me all of those things.
Well, in that case, let's get my very big D-ring binder out ready to go here. No, I love the segment. I think that, again, and I know you specifically have said, and I remember Tom saying many times sort of the sentiment that wrestling can be straightforward and be good, right? Like there doesn't the swerve culture and the curveballs are all well and good, but if you do them all the time, then they don't have their effect. And so I think that as we saw this story build to this point, and especially in the segment from Friday night, the way it all played out was exactly how I was expecting it to play out. And at one point, I know I had a big toothy grin, and my wife kind of looked at me and she's like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, just watch. Like, here's what's about to happen. And it happened. And she's like, well, isn't it bad that you know that it's happening? And I'm like, no, hon, this is the root of storytelling. Like, they have built to this point where you can sort of be in that moment with them because you know what's about to happen. So that said, I thought it was delivered well. And I do want to piggyback on what you said. I think if Roman has improved, and he's improved in lots of places over the last 3 years, but if he's improved anywhere, I think that one of the places I've seen him, and I think it's entirely because he embraces the chicken heel part of the heel persona he has to have, right? Because for as many times as he's been saved by the Usos or Solo or whoever, there is an element of that chicken heel. He sells really well when he knows he needs to sell. And I don't know that you could say that about him 3.5 years ago and earlier, where I think, well, I'm the tank. You're not going to hurt me. And if you do, I'm right back up. And I think he, more than anybody, sells a super kick very, very well. And I thought he did that very well in this segment specifically. So there's the segment at large. There's the story at large. As far as matches that come up, and actually I was kind of surprised to see that they were going to do a tag match at Money in the Bank. Because I thought, well, boy, you've still got SummerSlam coming. You've got Survivor Series after that. So I could see them as a betting person because, remember, we still have the Solo. Like, this could very quickly go from 4-on-0 to 3-on-1 to 2-on-2 to 3-on-1 the other way, maybe by Mania of next year, who knows. Because I could see Solo siding with his brothers ultimately. But I think they may well do maybe a best of three without calling that tag match Money in the Bank. I don't know if there's another pay-per-view before SummerSlam. But if there is not, certainly they could run it back at SummerSlam. I don't think you're going to start seeing JV Roman probably until the end of this year, early next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if Roman pulls a, well, you've got to get through mid-boss solo to get to me, as a way of sort of proving that he's ready again. Because certainly if you rewind to the beginning of this whole story, that's where it all started with Jay trying to beat Roman. So I would say you've probably got 4 to 7 matches before you ever really have to pay off JV Roman. And I know we've been saying it the last 2 or 3 years as far as Rock v. Roman. I don't know if that's ever really going to happen, but I think if it's not, is there a better night 2 or night 1 main event of this one coming up in Philly of this match? I don't know. I think that's maybe where it's building to, because I could see the Rumble winner going after Seth, provided that titles are still unified under Roman, the other two.
I've never been totally convinced that Rock Roman was going to happen. Even if planned, these are busy guys, Rock especially. So I've never been totally convinced it will happen. And if it happens, it's one of those that genuinely doesn't need the championship. I know that that's a big conversation. Can you say this match doesn't need the championship? Because if it's that big, maybe it should have it, whether you say that or not. But I think that's another have your cake and eat it too moment. Jay's champion. But you can have Rock and Roman headline WrestleMania without it if you want. And there's 2 nights to headline, so you got all kinds of options. Just seems like they've never had this many options.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I was reading something prior to Cody facing Roman that there was the potential for, and I'll call it a switcheroo, but that's not fair, where Cody was going to win, and then on the Raw after Mania, Heyman was going to come out with some sort of, when you signed the contract, you didn't read the small print. You only won the Raw title, and he still has the Universal title. And I wonder if they don't do something like that when Jay and Roman eventually do square off. Like, I think that, and I don't think that Rock Roman needs a belt, because that can be a night one, night two main event in and of itself. But I wonder if you still see money in Roman holding a belt. You certainly want him holding the Universal belt, not the World belt. And so is that maybe a way to draw it up, or to snake it with Jay as opposed to with Cody? So I don't know. I don't know what you think about that. I just remember reading that going into that match.
Oh, I think they could get real cutesy with that, and it would be a little too much in some ways, and it would make me convinced that Vince Russo got back somehow. because he would do that. You know what? If he was here, then the question, when will they do Jay versus Roman, would be, I don't know, next week. That would be his kind of approach. Just blow it off as soon as possible and think about the future after that. Very much a Crash TV sort of guy. But I guess we'll find out soon, and I trust them. And I like that we're talking about the fact that it'll be a long-term storyline, and we're not thinking about them just blowing this off at the next pay-per-view. Let's go down to Miami and talk to DJ. DJ, if you can hear me, go ahead and say hey and tell me what's on your mind.
Hey, guys. I got a couple things. I guess we can start with WWE, because you guys are there. I think they dropped the ball with Dominic and Cody. I really think Dominic should have won the Money in the Bank. You know, he's so over right now. It's crazy. You know, there's no other guy right now that they're booing for, and the arena is going crazy for. I feel like even if Dominic didn't win, let's say he lost the thing, and let's say in general Cody got it, or let's say he lost it to, I don't know, Priest or something crazy. But regardless, I feel like they lost that and they could have just won another way because Dominic's so over right now. It's just like once and done with Dominic, it's just I don't know what's going to do. What is Dominic going to do next? You know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't have that many people to go through. And, you know, I feel like Cody is feels like a little more fresher than like him and Seth, you know what I'm saying? So what do you guys think at the end of the day?
So I think that they recognize what they have with Dominic now is somebody who is so over as a heel that they can plug him into just about anything and get something big out of it. I don't mind that he's in a one-on-one situation because it means we get to see him do his act without without anybody else in the background. It is stunning to me to see where he is right now, and it's especially hilarious to me to see fans online complaining about Dominic because he's not the kind of guy that they think of as a star, but what he's able to do for his opponents and from a character standpoint has been nothing short of miraculous, considering that this guy is the son of a babyface lifer. I know that Rey Mysterio had a cup of coffee as a heel, but it never really needed to be, shouldn't have been, and he's a babyface. But Dom got all his talent on the other side of the aisle. I love what he does, and I don't mind that he's not in the Money in the Bank match because I think that he will give something to Cody here, and I feel like Dominic has gotten to a point kind of in a relatively short amount of time where they trust him enough to plug him into just about any role in any feud and to let the babyface opponent get something out of it, Kevin.
Yeah, I was going to say I agree, and I think I don't know that any ball's really been dropped yet because – Dominic has the best kind of heat. And I think similar to Corbin from a good handful of years ago where you just wanted to see him get his face pushed in. And I think the thing that helps Dom, and I don't think he needs to be Money in the Bank winner, but I think so long as he and Rhea are a tandem, that's going to be magic no matter what because he can get himself into any trouble he wants. And then call in the reinforcements, and Rhea will gladly step in and help how she can. And so I think that they're on to gold there. And I don't think it really, like you said, Kelly, I don't think it matters who he's up against. And you know, he can go 0-400 in the next year and a half. And that's okay because every time he shows back up, people are going to boo the heck out of him, and he's going to love every minute of it. And he's doing exactly... Like, he very much is living into the, well, you said when I was a good guy that I didn't have enough seasoning to be here yet because I skipped NXT and I'm just getting this because of my dad. Well, here I am, and now I'm a bad guy, so now deal with it. And it's they're doing it very, very well, and I'm just sort of excited to see how it goes. And I think part of the fun of this, and we can already expect shenanigans of some kind from Rhea, but just that satisfaction of Cody just making him eat his words in the end will be enough to send the crowd home happy, that's for sure.
Go ahead, DJ.
I think if they do a good feud, I think that I would love to see a Brandy come in. That'd be amazing. But my second thing is, I guess I want to go across the street and talk about Saturday. I don't know if you guys talked a lot about Saturday, but do you think he's lying? You know what I'm saying? So I feel like he's talking all this game, but you know what? I feel like he's still hurt. I don't know if he really has it. Like he had it, let's say, when he just left WWE. He keeps on saying he's hurt, this and this. I don't know. I just don't think at the end of the day, him and MJF, after that, where is he going to go? Who's going to come after him at the end of the day? I mean, I don't want to see, you know, the Bucks or Kenny. I want to see somebody pull up, you know, that who deserves it, you know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, what do you guys really think about this?
About Punk's return?
Yeah, because I feel like he's still hurt. I don't think he has it. Like, he always keeps on saying, you know, he's sore, he's still hurt still. So I don't know. What do you think?
I let me just say it wouldn't surprise me at all. Punk is he speaks a lot of times when he should probably hold back. But one thing that he's really, really great at, probably the thing he's best at, is self-promotion. He's always been good at that, or at least for many years now. And he is definitely the kind of guy who would downplay any injury he had so as to not be booked lesser. I would not be surprised to see his matches be worked in such a way that is a little bit reserved. But he could also learn a thing or two from, just for two examples, Chris Jericho and Hiroshi Tanahashi. If injuries mount up, learn a different way to work and work that way. And you kind of mask so many of the issues. With Chris Jericho, it was kind of just getting ahead of it. We don't know how hurt he was. We kind of know how many bumps he's taken. We couldn't count them, to be sure. But he kind of got ahead of it. Hiroshi Tanahashi destroyed his knees and learned a different way to work that was very much more ground-based, and he doesn't go up as often. I would tend to agree with you that Punk is fighting through more pain than he would be willing to admit, and I think he will keep that to himself as long as he's making money, Kevin.
Yeah, I was going to say I agree, and I think I think you're going to see more of what you saw Saturday with putting him in triples or tag matches in the way that many respected veterans who still get it done on the mic or still have the presence and still draw but don't have the juice that they had. You know, that's how you protect them and make them last longer. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he does more talking than wrestling. And when he does wrestle, unless it's a big, you know, one of their top four pay-per-views and or any sort of big cross promotions, that you don't see him teaming up as a six-man or as a tag team to allow him to get his stuff in while still not taking the lion's share of the big bumps.
Yeah, and they gave him this trios match, but they don't – I mean, Collision's just getting started. So he doesn't have to be that in the future. He can be a guy who's still there, who's still talking, but doesn't work a lot of matches. That would be – CM Punk in that company, I think, is the right kind of guy to do that kind of role. But we'll see what they think they can get out of him. DJ, do you have anything more?
Yeah, I want him. You know, if he's really hurt, whatever. I think that if he's gonna hang it up, I want him in commentary. He's great on commentary. Stockface, you know what I'm saying? Tony doesn't add anything, okay? JR, well, I don't know what's going on with JR. They need somebody at the end of the day, and you know they have all these shows, but they have the same announcers, and the announcers are not that good. And Tony has the money to bring in some great announcers, but he doesn't. It's just like, you know, at the end of the day, I would like CM Punk be in the commentary. I don't know, but if he can't wrestle, do something and keep that money up, you know. So JR can make it, he can make it, you know what I'm saying? So hopefully we'll see what happens with that. But going to the next person, like the same thing, Mr. Adam Cole, same thing. He's hurt. He ain't going to admit why he's still hurt. You know what I'm saying? You can tell he's not working out. He's not, you know, getting a tan. He's not really doing anything. He's talking more. He's wrestling. And at the end of the day, you know, look what happened with the MJF thing. I didn't like that. They went 30 minutes. It's just like MJF talked all this stuff, but then he went 30 minutes with Adam Cole. But okay, buddy, like, come on. It's just so weird. Like, you can tell that, you know, oh, with the Jericho thing, you saw craziness, but all of a sudden, with this, he's wrestling and taking it easy and no craziness. But it's just like, I feel like at the end of the day, I don't know. I feel he's still hurt. I feel like he's a better heel than Babyface. You know what I mean? Who's he going to go against at the end of the day? Punk? I mean, that, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't know with him either. It's the same thing with him. You know, Punk, the same thing. I just feel like he's still hurt and he's not there yet.
My biggest thing with Cole is kind of what you said there. He's quite a bit better at being a heel. But the problem with him, even as a heel, is that he's always kind of a cool heel, and then people cheer him and they think they want to turn him. And then he gets turned and it doesn't work to the same level. It seems like he can't make that seamless transition that heels like, for instance, The Rock have made in the past. I don't know how hurt he is. I didn't detect as much of it, but that's because he was in a one-on-one setting. So I don't know about that. I can't speak to that. I'll see what Kevin thought about that. But yeah, it is an issue. Like, what do you do with him? I've been worried about what this company was going to do with him ever since I heard that he was, and we knew that he'd probably end up there. His wife's there. She wasn't going anywhere. So we've thought for a while that he was going to end up there. And I've had my doubts that they would know exactly what to do with him. And I don't, that's not to say WWE knew what to do with him. I don't think they did either. Vince certainly didn't. He wanted to make him a manager when he brings so much in the ring. But there's value in him. So Kevin, I need you to solve all of wrestling's problems and tell me what the right thing is to do with Adam Cole.
Yeah, well, and I think that time is still on his side, but I really, and just you guys bringing it up made me think, I'm really scared for him that he is Ken Griffey Jr. having gotten traded from the Seattle Mariners to the Cincinnati Reds. And you're right. I don't think Vince had great plans for him that would have shot him up more than what he was in the independents and then in the glory days of NXT. But since moving, I feel like he's been hurt more than he hasn't. Storylines have not been great around him in much the same way that, you know, I believe Griffey would be the home run king had he not gotten traded to Cincinnati. And so I just fear that the grass isn't greener. And I know that certainly Britt is there and like the move was never in question, but I just think it was one of those where, ooh, we have to get him. Okay. We got him. Okay. Now what? And so I feel like they're largely spinning their wheels. And I feel like he's still got a lot of gas in his tank. And I think if you didn't do it well with Punk and you didn't do it well with Cody, although I know Cody had a lot to do with his own sort of creative issues, let him be who people who are really high on him, let him be that and show us kind of those roots of AEW in the, well, we're going to give the wrestlers creative control over their own paths, like live into that now, because I think they're trying to get too cute with him and it's doing more harm than good. And certainly being hurt is not helping him when, at least if I can say anything about sort of WWE's injured people, they do try to get them on TV in some sort of segment, where I think largely to me, AEW's booking philosophy has been out of sight, out of mind. And that can hurt a guy like Cole, who a lot of his charisma comes from being in front of people, whether he's wrestling or not.
Yes, indeed. DJ, if you got one more, go ahead.
I just want to say this, though. But, like, I feel like if he's going to come back and he knows he's going to come back, I do feel like he needs to gain weight or go to the gym or something, because I feel like I don't want him as my champion. Like, I'm just making an example. Look at Buddy and then look at Cole. Like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on. If you really look, who's going to really win in a street fight? You know what I mean? Like, he can't be it's like Darby. I feel like Darby can be one of the champions, but not heavyweight. He's just, you know, less than 200 pounds. Come on. You understand what I'm saying, right? Like, if you're going to take it seriously, do something like, you know, MJF said. You know what I'm saying? Not just, you know, run your mouth. So at the end of the day, I feel like if they're going to really push him, he's going to have to do his work too. You see what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. And I think that's true. Like, I don't get, as a viewer, I don't get hung up on that, but many do. And it's really hard for somebody of that size to be consistently presented as a championship threat without it just being a very short transitional championship reign, which wouldn't do him or wouldn't do anybody any good. So it's, I don't know, everybody's body responds differently to the way they want to bulk up, but if he wants to work the way he wants to work, then it's true that he'll probably have to be satisfied at the tier of like secondary championships, because I don't think either of these two major American companies would push him any higher than that, given the number of guys they have on the roster who are genuine monsters, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that we need to belabor it more than that, but I think he's the pilot of his own canoe, and if he wants to be taken more seriously, you know, and again, I think it's nature of the beast of where he's at now is not as much as it used to be, but primetime American wrestling still functions on the backs of 6'3" and higher and 240 pounds and more and ripped, especially on the men's side. And if he doesn't want to be that, that's fine. But then, like you said, you either have to know what lane you're in and do the best you can in that lane, or do what you need to do to get into a new lane. And if he's not willing to do that or his body can't handle it, well, then either it's time to throttle back or go back to the indies. I don't know. It's a simple issue with a complicated answer because most of the ball is in his court.
Absolutely. DJ, we thank you for the call.
Yeah, I look at A-Town. I mean, look at him. You know what I'm saying? He looks good, and he can talk. Adam can do that. So look at him in ROW. He was ripped. You know, not big, but he was ripped up more than where he is now. If you can go back to like that, you know, he would be way better. But we'll see at the end of the day.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we thank so much. Let us So what haven't we covered here? Let's talk. I don't know, Money in the Bank, since we kind of were covering this, Kevin. So here's who's in those Money in the Bank matches as of now. Ricochet, Shinsuke Nakamura, LA Knight, Santos Escobar, Butch, and Damian Priest. And then on the women's side, we've got Zelina Vega, Zoe Stark, Becky Lynch, Io Sky, and Bayley. A couple of different sub-stories going on there that could be started to be paid off at that show. The women's seems primed for one of the existing stars to potentially go over, but at the very least, they will prop up somebody else if they do. The men's, none of these guys have totally gotten their stripes on the main roster, so barring someone else getting thrown in there, it seems like this match will be used for elevation as has always been able to be the case, but sometimes they just don't do it that way.
Yeah, well, I remember, and as you were talking, I distinctly remember the last time, and I don't know if you were on this show or on the Monday or Friday show with Wade when Money in the Bank was last around, and you had a really good point on why Money in the Bank exists, who the type of people are who should win it, and what can happen when you follow the recipe instead of trying to outthink yourself as a management team. I completely agree with your women's synopsis. I do think that on the women's side, it'll be a way to sort of right the ship to get people back into the championship picture that they want that don't have a clear line. But as I was looking at the names prior to you reading them off, and then you reading them off again for the men, I wouldn't, and I know we've said this before about other matches, I wouldn't be mad if any one of them won. Certainly, you know, I have my sort of guilty pleasure favorite, and I know I'm not unique in this, but I would love to see what LA Knight could do with the briefcase. But I think if the rumors of Carlito coming back are true, and if he comes back as sort of the cagey veteran to LWO, it might be interesting to see Santos win it and use that as a platform to get LWO a little more credibility. Certainly Priest has the built-in storyline with Seth and Finn and sort of that, what they've been playing out over Raw the last few weeks. You know, I'm still a big Ricochet guy from when he was on Black and Gold NXT. He made one heck of a North American champion. For whatever reason, they like him for his athleticism, and that's it. But I wouldn't be mad if he won and maybe tried to parlay that into something. So I'd be very interested to see what direction they take the men's match in. And I agree that if they use it as an elevator like they can and should, they have a chance to, especially with Seth's title being something they want to build, it could be a really great way to keep the bloodline around the Undisputed Championship scene and even have Cody sprinkled in there as he sort of gets through what he's got to get through. And then maybe just have the Money in the Bank group focus on Seth, and you can get a lot of good matches out of those folks from the Money in the Bank match. And if you need to sprinkle in a theory, sprinkle in a theory. Because I know he's kind of got lost in the shuffle, especially with the new championship for Seth, and he's certainly got all the talent in the world. So it'll be interesting to see how the next couple weeks of TV play out. But, yeah, I'm excited for all the guys in that match, and it'll be interesting to see which way they go.
Yeah, I think if I had to choose today, throw out the guesses of LA Knight and Bayley. LA Knight's relatively fresh, but he's not young. So if they want to get something out of this momentum, it should probably be sooner than later, because I think folks who don't know how long he's been wrestling would be surprised to learn that he's on the wrong side of 40. So if they're going to do something, they should do it. Let's go to Murfreesboro and talk to Sean. Yeah, if you can hear me, go ahead and say hey.
Yeah, Kelly, man, it's been a while. I knew you were on here tonight, and I was doing some other stuff, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to call in. But then right as I called in, I saw you and Kevin, the professor, were on here, and I was like, I got to get on here, man. So I miss you guys. It's good to talk to y'all. How y'all doing?
It's always good to hear from you. I'm doing great. We're covering a fairly busy week in terms of stories, kayfabe stories, and we just only barely mentioned Carlito, which is very welcome news to me. I love the dude, and whatever he's going to do, I'm sure that he will do it well. So what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, just going to the Money in the Bank, because you guys were just bringing that up, and I kind of, you know, wanted to bring my thoughts on it real fast and see what you all were thinking. As far as, I mean, I'm with you guys on LA Knight. I would love to see LA Knight win it for sure. He's, you know, you hear the argument about him is, well, he's not as good in the ring, but, like, he's good enough in the ring, people. Like, he's really, he's good. He can have a good WWE match, and he's over right now. Even though he's a heel and, you know, people are cheering him, but, I mean, he still does the heel thing so well that I would love to see, you know, where they would go with that, and I think they could. I think it'd be fine. But for the women, I know they're not going to do this, and I wanted to run it by you because really nobody's brought it up, because I don't think, you know, she's going to win, and she probably shouldn't, I guess, right now. But I would love to see Zoe win that briefcase. I really would. I mean, I know, and you guys probably would agree, I think her promo was a little iffy Monday for sure. It was a little nervous, even though I thought the first promo with Trish was really kind of good and seemed in the flow. And then this one with Becky was a little off kilter. Like, she kind of was trying to find her footing, I feel like. And the crowd, I think, got to her a little bit. But I really think they could do you can make a star with Zoe Stark. And I think they could do that. And I don't think they're going to go that route, but I think that'd be really fun. What do you guys think about that? Is there any possibility that could happen? I doubt it, but what do y'all think?
I think they'd be crazy not to kick around that name as an idea to win, but I too don't think that they will land on it. And it is because of things like this past week where it just seems like, okay, if we're going to get something out of her, let's not try to do too much too soon and then find out that she's damaged for a while because we went too hard too soon. As somebody who's seen everything she's done in NXT, I know what she can be when she's at her best. I saw her blossom from kind of – she could work right away. She could do a badass match right away. She came in and she debuted as a heel, but in her second match, she played babyface and then was a babyface for quite a while. And it was all right, mm-hmm. especially when she did the odd couple tag team with Io Shirai. And they had their different attitudes where Io didn't want to be there, but Zoe wanted to be buddies. That was fun stuff. And she seemed to find her footing then. And by the time they turned her heel the next time, it just seemed like she was fully formed. And I said, there's nothing more for her to do here. And she had her title shot and some people chose her. And I said, no, there's no reason for her to have a run with that belt. Just move her up right now and save the belt for people who can who need a little more seasoning here. But they get in front of different lights, and we know that there are copious rewrites on shows like Raw and SmackDown, and maybe that got in the way, and she's not used to a lot of things changing beforehand. Hard to say what it is. I think that she will thrive in this environment, and she'll have her moments, whether she wins or not. If she's not going to win, I hope they have a long tease sequence, because they tease everyone a little bit, but there's always that person where they say, oh, they could have gone all the way with that person, and it was so close, and it's so tantalizing. And they've done that quite a few times, and that is what I'm expecting to see with her. But Kitani, tell me if she could actually win this thing.
You know, we talked about the whole using Money in the Bank as elevation. If you wanted to elevate someone, she's the person you elevate. You know, you brought her out with Trish right away as sort of an enforcer there. Like, you don't get too many better sort of starting spots on the main roster than that. You know, certainly, as you guys both sort of alluded to, having a live mic in front of, you know, 15 to 18 to 20,000 people is a far bigger difference than the, you know, the 1,800 seats at the Performance Center. But I think she certainly is very talented, and I've been along with that NXT run with you guys as well. And I think if you want to elevate, then have her win. And if you don't want to keep her with Trish, but need her to have a something to talk about, now you have the briefcase to talk about, because she certainly has the physical chops to hang in the ring with any of the top women right now. It's just a matter of letting her character develop a bit more than like right now where those, if you were to average these two promos, there's enough sort of one note Ronda, what did Wade used to call her? Angry 5-year-old? Like, it can't just be yelling in the camera and messing with your jacket. Like, there's got to be more to it. And so, not that she is Ronda, will be Ronda, whatever, but, like, there was similarities to it. To say that, if you want to give her something to focus a character around, the briefcase could be a really great way to do it. And if you want somebody like Bayley to help make her look good and put her over and have some of the established names do that, I don't think, Sean, you're crazy for thinking that. I think that could be – that's the elevator move if you want to use it to elevate.
You know, the Money in the Bank, you win the title shot, and that's great. But even if you're not going to win the title that first time out, the briefcase is such an important prop. And somebody like LA Knight was made to carry that thing and use it to mock others. And we saw that with him with the $1 million championship. That's made for somebody like him. And just to use that to as one more, it doesn't matter what you do, I've got this, and or what you say, I've got this and you don't. And I think Zoe could be helped by that too. So I find myself always wanting it to be a heel that wins these, for that reason. But in this case, it really does seem like those could fit. Sean, what else?
Well, first I wanted to say, too, I didn't bring it up, but happy Father's Day to you and Professor and all the dads out there that are that have a hard job, but we appreciate all that you do. I got to call my dad, and it was a good conversation, so I was thankful for that. I want to thank all the dads out there. I'll stay with the women today because, the women deserve praise. And so we'll go to the Charlotte Bianca. I want to see what you guys thought about that segment this last week. I thought we've talked about it. I mean, Wade talked about it a little bit, and I was on there with him asking about it. But I thought, Bianca, we all know, has been a little cold lately. She's been – I just go back to a couple years ago. I was on Nick and Tom's and just saying how her 2021 was so awesome, and they were doing such a great job, and she felt so authentic, and everything was just going so well. And these last 2 years have really kind of fallen off. And I'm one of the people that I think she kind of needs the title right now because she feels so cold. But at this, and losing to Asuka beating Asuka WrestleMania and losing in Saudi Arabia was just really weird to me. I didn't get that whole thing. But coming back, I thought the promo on SmackDown this week was a really good step in the right direction. Like, I thought she took control on the mic and kind of gave it to Charlotte quite a bit, and I liked it. But I wanted to hear you guys' aspect on that promo. But then going back to Charlotte, just the way she came back was fine. But Charlotte just feels – they have her as a star, and she's a really big star, but at the same time, just her character just never works for me. I never really get it. I think we all know she's a natural-born heel. She doesn't work very well as a face. I think in the tweener role right now. So where do you think they're going with that, and what do you think of the promo on SmackDown with Bianca?
I would be broke if I spent money betting on where they were going with Charlotte. It just seems... like I don't know if there's no direction or if they just want her so close to the center that they can move her whenever they want. Kind of like a Big Show or a Kane where, this person can do it on both sides, even though Kane's better as a heel, even though the Show is honestly better as a face. You have them lean just a little so you can get them to what side you need at any given time. That's why those three are record breakers as far as turning from one side to the other. I don't know what would I say about what I think of Charlotte. Is what you said was, I don't know that I get it. And I guess I could kind of say that. She is very good. She is undeniably a star. But there's very much a feeling for me of been there, done that with everything she's done. I struggle to come up with something that I need to see Charlotte do that hasn't been done. As far as Bianca, I dare say that it seems like maybe hunger is back. I don't know what it is. It could be her hunger, or it could be that the writers didn't know how to do a championship reign with her, but they knew how to make her hungry. They knew how to write this version of Bianca, which almost suggests to me that maybe what she needs is not to have the championship because something's clicking and it's making her kind of shine now that she doesn't have the championship to fall back on.
Kelly, can I bring this up real quick? Can I bring something up real fast that you were saying that? I was just going to say, I want to see the match. I want to see a Charlotte-Bianca match. I want to see. That's the one match we haven't seen that I want to see. So I wanted to throw that in there, too, because it's a feud that we haven't seen. It's going to be great if they do it.
That's true. I feel like she's done everything, so I guess I'm overlooking the one thing right in front of me. That has not happened because I'm focusing so much on their characters. But yes, I have no doubt that will deliver one way or another. I just hope that they get there. These are both characters that have misstepped as characters at different times. But if they do it right, we're either going to get there and we're going to be like, that whole ride was awesome, or we're going to say that match saved a really horrible build.
Right.
Because either way, the match is going to be aces. Kevin.
Yeah, well, Sean, thank you for the Father's Day sentiment. And actually, it's not only fabulous that you brought it up, but that you brought up Bianca, because one of my Father's Day gifts today from one of my daughters was the Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair two wrestling figure set, because the girls now watch wrestling with me on especially Monday nights. And apparently my wife said they were both leaning Star Wars toys for daddy. And at the last second, my five-year-old saw, she calls her kissy face girl for Bianca, saw the wrestling pack with her and Becky, and apparently screamed so loud that like six people in Target stopped what they were doing. And like, couldn't wait for me to open this figure this morning. And as soon as I got it out, she wanted to open it and play with it. And so, yes, both of my daughters are huge Bianca fans. But Kelly, if I remember correctly, back when Bianca was still really sort of taking over NXT, I think it may have been you that said that you got the vibe back then that she is a better hunter than prey. And I think that that's still the case, where because she's a legitimate athlete, she's a legitimate track star and knows, you know, actual competition, that chasing goals is all athletes know. And there, in the world of real athletics, there isn't ever a, okay, I made it, I can just sit back, unless you're retiring, right? Like, there's always the next Super Bowl year or the next NBA championship year. And to have the belt as long as she did, it makes sense to me that she went stale, because, well, I've got it and all I can do is defend it, but like, your blade doesn't stay as sharp when you're the best knife in the drawer than when you're trying to become the best knife in the drawer. And so I think that we'll get to see that hunter vibe again, and I think that does suit her very well. I also agree with the both of you. I've always sort of been Jim Halpert face on Charlotte. I've never felt that she buys what her character is. I think to some extent we could say the same thing about her character that we do about Seth from time to time, where you can say, well, what is Seth freaking Rollins? In the same way that you can say that about Charlotte, because whether she's a face or a heel, I never get the vibe that she buys it. And I don't care how menacing or smiley or whatever she looks when she looks in the camera. It's not apathy, but it certainly is not full send buy-in. And I think that hurts when you've got somebody that is as dynamic as she is, where it's scary to think what she could be if we felt that she cared more.
Yeah, I'm actually way with you there. She often comes off as like, oh, it's so neato that I get to be a wrestler. And and it's so weird that she's got one of the best teachers available in the world as far as buy-in and engagement in your role, but she'll go out there as a heel and something charming will happen. And on full view of the camera, she just smiles at that thing that is happening for the baby faces or whatever, or with the baby face reaction that somebody else is getting. She just, like, kayfabe's dead. Yeah. But she drops that character if she just wants to live in the moment for a second. And it seems so silly, but if you do that all the time, if you don't believe in you, then how am I going to?
Right. And it seems like that's the kind of stuff that is just fine for house shows. But like, when you know the camera's going to be on you for an extended period of time, you've got to hold it together better than that.
Yeah. And house shows are fine. Like, Owen Hart making packing peanut angels on the ground. No. Mankind making packing peanut angels after Owen hit him with a sack of packing peanuts. That I wish I had been there to see. Because I've seen some things that house shows, but that's a whole different podcast. Sean, what else do you have?
And the other thing I was going to bring up too, Kelly, was it has been weird you and Nate not being on podcasts the last 2 weeks. That's just weird. Man, I know you have guys that things going on, but it's just like I thought about it and I saw Bruce's, you know, another week, you know, where you guys couldn't be on because you had other stuff to do, and I was like, man, this is I miss these guys on talking NXT. Like I miss it. I really, really miss it. So I'll be glad when you guys are able to get back on there and talk some NXT. I know that'll be soon. I want to just go back to. I mean, we talk about CM Punk all day, but I'm going to stay away from that train. I will say I loved everything everybody's brought up about it. There was a lot of good talk last night about Collision, and the show was fine for what it was, but I think they still have an issue on their hands later on down the line, but we'll see. I wanted to talk about their women's division too, because I just wanted to bring up the women. I just think the AEW women's division, there's a lot of talent. We do know that. There's a lot of good talent in that division, but it's just I think it's just been booked really, really poorly as a whole. I think Jamie Hayter had done a really good job up to the point she got injured, and that's unfortunate. Hopefully she'll be able to get back soon. But this Outcast thing, it's just not doing it for me. I'm just not into it. They're trying to bring up something that was good a long time ago, and it's just not good anymore. It's not fun anymore. Nobody cares about it. It's old, done. And with the whole going back to the Statlander thing, I brought that up at nauseam, how I didn't like the way she won the title from Jade. We don't know when Jade's coming back. But now she's going to wrestle on Dynamite against Taya Valkyrie, who she just lost to Jade twice. So what does it matter if Chris Statlander beats her? Like, I think Taya's a very good wrestler. I like Taya a lot. I think she'll be good as a heel. I think she's better as a heel. But how does that help Chris Statlander to beat Taya when she just lost to Jade not once, but twice? And I think the women's division is in a bad situation. So I wanted to hear what you guys thought about their women's division as a whole and kind of where they're going. And, Kelly, I appreciate you, man. And, Professor, it's always good talking to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
And thank you, Sean. I don't think that they think about the women's division more than a week or two in advance. I really don't. I maybe they have some pay-per-view stuff figured out, but I think largely it's week to week, and I don't know that anybody's taking notes on this. It needs to be in the hands of one capable booker who's keeping track of what's been done and why. But yeah, it's never been in a great place. I don't even know where to start with it. Oh, let me get this out of the way. PWT Talks NXT. I'll be there next week. Last week, first 2 weeks I was gone. It is because I had two deaths in the family. Neither one was surprising, but they were only a few days apart, and it'll kind of knock you flat when that happens. I was the writer and deliverer of the eulogy for one of them, so it was a pretty rough couple of weeks there. After that, last Tuesday, I was ready to come back and then found out that a college visit to my daughter starting next year. So speaking of being dad, she's graduating here. She's going to college this year, and we had a college visit orientation that day. So that is why I couldn't make it back down from Duluth in time to be on that show. Otherwise, I would have been. I will be there this week, barring a third death in the family. Probably shouldn't tempt fate. Anyway, AEW Women's Division. I'm not entirely sure how to add on to that conversation more than has been already said, but I guess my issue is always that it seems like it's tacked on. If I had to guess, I would say that when the show is being laid out, I'll bet whatever the women are doing is the last thing they think to add to the show. That is what I really get from the way the women are booked. I think they are largely an afterthought. And there are fans who say, if you pick up this piece of talent, that'll solve the problem. It won't, because the problem is the presentation of the entire division as a division. They have enough talent to make it a very compelling division, but they have chosen not to do so. Kevin.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. I think it's all a culture thing. you know, and I think I have talks with my students a lot as it relates to sort of mainstream team sports. But when you look at franchises that routinely get number one picks or have the cap space to trade for the big stars, and yet they still lose or they still don't make championship runs. Well, how can that be? They've got the talent. They've got this. They've got that. Yeah, but the culture is poor. The administrative culture is poor. The operating culture is poor. And I think that's exactly what we have here, because when you look on paper, top to bottom, the names in that women's division, that should be a pillar of that company, and it's not. And I know I, in addition to my own sort of viewership, I do pay attention to our good friend and PW Torch alumnus Harley, and his Grit and Glitter podcast, and like they even keep stats on it, and the number of times that like the show only has one women's segment, and in many cases it's not a wrestling segment, it's a talking segment, and so it's like, if you're not going to prioritize them, why should your fans prioritize them? And then coupled with an over an abundance of talent, well, now there's not enough minutes on the show to even give them their due, outside of, you know, I've seen them do, you know, random battle royals or random six women tag matches just to get people out there. And it's like, again, like you said, if it's an afterthought, why am I supposed to get invested knowing full well that next week there might not be any women's segments? And so I think it is a culture thing, and I think while we probably tell celebrities in the media to not pay attention to social media commentary, I've seen a lot of good thoughts across the social media landscape about how you can reinvigorate their women's division and just give it some more time. And, you know, it's those people that are buying tickets, and if you want them to keep buying tickets, you know, make a commitment to change, or don't be mad when that becomes a problem. So I don't know. It's sad.
Well, now that we're on a total downer, I guess it's time to leave everyone sad. Unless there's anything else you want to bring up from the week. We did get to Carlito, which I had written down. Seth Rollins is going to do NXT. The Gold Rush, is that going to be on the NXT? Yeah, that'll be on the NXT show. So Braun Breaker versus Seth Rollins. Seth, of course, the first NXT champion, for those of you who weren't watching 10 years ago, but he was. Anything else on the week of wrestling you want to do on some quick cleanup, or have we pretty much hit it, Kevin?
Listen, I don't want to end on a downer, because you know that's not my style. I'm very much – I'm every bit of the face that I portend to be, and it's not necessarily a wrestling thing, but you being a collectibles entrepreneur yourself, the Magic the Gathering Lord of the Rings crossover just pre-released this weekend, and I've been able to crack a few packs, and let me tell you, it's given me all the Lord of the Rings feels that I didn't know I needed from a collectible card game. So if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, check it out. And listeners, if any of you play Magic the Gathering, go buy a couple packs and check it out, because it has been a lot of fun looking at the cards so far.
Folks, I run a collectible card shop. I do the sports cards, but I know gaming cards as well. And that stuff is each person there at the store kind of has their thing. And boy, oh boy, am I getting sick of people asking, do you have the Lord of the Rings cards yet? Because we don't do tournaments, so I can't sell them early. So,
oh, darn.
So hold on, folks. It's simple. We just don't have the room to do tournaments because we are stuffed to the gills with product. But that will come, and I'm sure that will be very cool. So, ask me about wrestling, but also ask me about cards, because I sure do like them. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Kevin.
And I'm at KP Catania on Twitter, and we can talk wrestling, we can talk magic, and we can talk on a serious note more about things like emotional intelligence and social-emotional learning, because that is needed very much so in the world today. So I do all of that. And again, Kel, thanks so much for asking me. I can now check a very huge check box off my bucket list of wrestling talk shows because I love Greg's show, and it's just been so cool to be a part of this one. So thank you.
Yes, indeed. And always good to chat with you, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon. So that's it, folks. If it's Sunday, it must be Wrestling Night in America, and I will see you on Tuesday. Cheers. Cool.
Are we off?
We are off.
I wasn't sure if I got hung up on once the show ended or not.
Depends on how I do it. I have definitely accidentally done that at the end of the show, and then I send a message, and I was like, I didn't mean to do that. I was going to say just, hey, thanks, whatever. But this time I remembered. I almost didn't. That's why there was a pause at the end of the show. I'm like, no, don't hang up yet. Just end the show.
Yeah, well, and I always hold my breath because I know there's always that sort of, you got to give them the second to be able to do the outro music and all that when they go back in for editing, but I wasn't sure if I was going to get hung up on or not.
Yep. Nope, we are good.
Well, listen, it's so great to hear your voice, and I know I sent some Facebook messages your way regarding the death in your family, but I continue to think about you and your family and pray for you guys because no matter how expected death is, it doesn't suck any less, so.
Yep. Yeah, it was a lot. And I will say the one nice thing that came of it is I'm not an outwardly emotional person. So people were really surprised. Like, they know I can write. So when I wrote the tribute to my grandpa, like, nobody was surprised by that. But because I don't show emotions, they were surprised that I wanted to do it. Like, insofar as I was sure going to do it, they were like, cool, that's a great tribute. But yeah, it was just me stepping out emotionally and doing that kind of took my family by surprise. So after the funeral, I got to talk to like everybody, just a parade of people wanted to talk to me about kind of breaking through in a way that I don't usually very often.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, that was, it was kind of nice. It's, you get a family reunion, whether you were planning one or not. So that was,
yeah,
that was,
I was
going to
say,
it really
one of those
did
where you
like
always
that
sort of do the, boy, you know, we should get together more than just at funerals, but it always seems to be a time when everybody comes back.
Yep. So that was that.
Well, I'm sorry, so, yeah, and I hope you're able to work through that.
Yeah, it was, I didn't mention this on the show, but on the day we were going to, so 2 days before we were going down to Blue Earth for the funeral, one of my cats got out of the house and was gone. And for a couple days, completely gone. And I'm like, I cannot take this right now because these deaths were expected. I can handle them. My cat is only 7 and I adore her and I see her every day and she has a lot of life left to give. I cannot handle this right now. And
yeah,
I got her 6 years to the day from today I got her on Father's Day, 2017.
Wow.
So, which happens to be six years ago today. But we, on the day we were to go to the funeral, we were actually thinking about having Kathy stay home. Because Corporal Fuzzington was gone and
right,
Kathy gets up at 5 and she thinks she sees a black animal like half a block away out the front window. And then she says, well, I better just go handle my plants in the backyard and then go out that way and kind of go out slowly. And she goes to the back door and Corporal was actually sitting on our front stoop or our back stoop right on the top stair, just waiting to be let in.
Wow.
She was gone like 48 hours or a little longer. Kathy opened the door and Corporal was a feral cat. So she,
oh,
like some of the instincts came back. And so for a minute she didn't want to come in. And then she just ran in past Kathy and went to eat and stuff. I'm asleep because it's 5 a.m. So any non-complete,
yes,
ridiculous person was asleep. And I wake up at 8 to scratching in the corner. And I'm like, that's not the corner that Samushu goes to. And also, Samushu doesn't scratch very often. And so, like, groggy as hell, I just lean over and I look, and it's Corporal. And, like, I don't cry over anything, but fuck, man, when I saw her, I just couldn't even help it. Like, too many things.
Sure.
Over the last 4 seconds. And I didn't even know the answer yet. I was like, was she here hiding the whole time? Because that's not like her. The other one would hide for 3 days, but Corporal wouldn't. And Corporal was loud, like annoyingly loud sometimes. But yeah, it was, I was not prepared to handle that. And the fact that we knew where she was when we went down to the funeral, oh my God, it's crazy how much that helped. And then today, sure. You know, you go to Facebook and it says, check out your memories from this date. And today's memory was getting, because I was given my two cats on Father's Day. They were a Father's Day gift to me. And if I had looked today and Corporal was still gone,
it would have been the worst memory
that I'd ever been given from Facebook.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, in a bad month, I got that one piece of good news when my kids.
Yeah, there you go.
Home.
Yeah. And just quick, and then obviously I'll let you go, but any new games in the pipeline?
I am working on 2, but I'm actually spending more time right now writing a script.
Oh, cool.
Because I've done a lot of that. I had a pilot that Fox picked up, and we shot the pilot, like I was in it, and it was, you can find that on IMDb. It's a show I was co-creator and I was in called Meet Virginia, and it aired in the Pacific Northwest, and they had 2 shows that were extremely similar, and they ended up buying the other one, and then it didn't make it to the end of the series, but it's a churn. So they've already moved beyond you. So they didn't end up picking us up then. But, and I've had other near brushes with greatness, with writing. And my favorite thing that I've ever thought of, but the script that I hate the most that I wrote, I'm rewriting, because I know it can be great, and I have come up with a lot of different ways to improve upon what I did before. And it, to the point where I'm actually not even reading my old scripts anymore. The old versions, I did 2 passes through on this one, and this time I don't want to be bogged down with them. I don't even remember what the names of the characters are anymore. I've changed them, I think. It could be that they're the same, But I'm just I'm rewriting that one, and I'm very excited about that. But I'm also working on a board game, but it's kind of a big idea. It would be a lot, called Numb, and it's the idea is that it's about emotional isolation, so a little bit autobiographical.
Yeah.
But so it's intended for 4, but the 4 players each handle something else about the character because his mind is kind of fragmented and he's in a place that he doesn't understand, doesn't know how he got there. And the players, to drive home the isolation, cannot talk to each other about what they want the other person to do to control his movements and his choices. So people are different parts of his conscience and different parts of his choices and his physicality. And it's a legacy game where when you play through enough chapters, you start to learn more. And it's also his discovery of connecting emotionally also coincides with the players being allowed to talk more about their next steps.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. So, like, as the game evolved, as the human evolved in the story, the player's ability to do the game evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Love that. That's really cool. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, it's a lot. But I've just got some of the first steps down. And then one that's much more simpler and stripped down that I've kind of been kicking around for probably 4 or 5 years, but I'm trying to get a real version of it down. But it's another card placement game, sort of like Funded, but it's a much different idea, where you're actually sitting yourself down where you want to sit at the lunch table in school, because you're trying to get to the cool table, or be the cool table, or become the cool person. And it's about clicks, and it's just kind of making fun of clicks. So.
Sure. Well, when that makes it the Kickstarter, whatever I have to do to back to be in that game, damn it. I always sort of, I chuckle to myself because I know it wasn't right as soon as it happened, but, and now I'm going to forget the guy's name, the listener who won the right to be in Funded.
Chris Fielder's in it.
Yeah. Fielder's, yes. I don't know that he stopped emailing the second he got put in that game. And
yeah, I it just
myself,
happened because he stopped watching NXT, but yeah.
Yeah, no. And it was all just a coincidence of timing. But I'm like, if Kelly puts out another one, damn it, I'm going to back to get in it and not be the guy that drops off after he ascends to the level of game goddom. So just know that if that happens and I'm fortunate enough to make my way in, I will not abandon you.
All right. Well, that is good to know. I just played it 2 nights ago for the first time in quite a while because my daughter brought out Funded and wanted to play against me. And we had played like probably 20 or 30 times. And after she finally beat me, she stopped bringing it to me because she was like, okay, that's out of the way. Started playing different games. And so to win, she freaking beats me again. It was nip and tuck, but she's so good. She's got my mind for abstract strategy. So,
well, that's good. And then based on what you were telling Sean, is she going to Minnesota Duluth?
This is the other one. My younger one is the one who's really good at games. My older one's going to UMD. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, it is college visit season. I get emails all through summer of potential students coming for visits. So I know I know the mindset you and your family are in right now with that, because that's a zoo of its own, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Well, if I can be of any help in that regard, please don't hesitate to reach out as far as college and first year and all that goes. But certainly I don't want to keep you, so go. But thanks for chatting with me a little bit after, and we'll definitely be in touch soon.
Yeah, that was a great show. Thanks, man.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Kelly. We'll talk soon.
Yep, see ya.
Okay, bye.